This is Malaya Blue, and you are listening to The Raven and the Blues.
Thank you. fabulous is that? Forgiveness. It's the Raven and the Blues on FM on various stations across the world. It's almost getting too many to mention now, and online across the world too. First session of 2015. It gives me huge pleasure to welcome Malaya Blue to the studios. Welcome, Malaya.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's probably remiss of me, but for me, you only kind of appeared in my sort of constellation, if you like, about a year and a bit ago. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's right. The album came out last March, April, so it's just nearly a year, shy of a month or two.
And that was your first album?
It is, yeah.
And before that, well, tell me the back history of Malaya Blue.
I went to university to do a music technology degree, mm-hmm. and one of the units that we had to look at was, music business. So I was looking for different people to collaborate with, and there are all kinds of industry magazines and things. And I sent some songs off to a guy called Andy Littlewood. Andy Littlewood, of course, is the producer for Bourbon Street.
Yes.
And we spent a long time, about 10 years, doing other things, kind of pop, commercial tracks, dance, all kinds of different stuff. And then I did a guest vocal for Mick Simpson on his album,
yes.
called Find Another You, and that was where it started. We had such an incredible response to that track, and Andy said, I think maybe this is the genre that we should be, I should be singing in, and thank God for that.
Did you drop naturally into it, or it's obviously you would have dabbled with it before, I guess, did you?
Yeah, I think I dabbled with it through, passively listening to it, but... Mm. I never thought of myself as a blues singer, I guess, a blues and jazz singer. But when we recorded Find Another You, it just felt completely natural. For me as a lyricist, it's very important that the story is captured and that the emotion is given to the lyric. And so, and of course, blues is just the genre, isn't it, to be in for that, absolutely.
And did you have to alter, bearing in mind you'd been doing different styles over the years, over the decade, did you have to kind of alter the way you approached the music altogether in terms of where you used the voice and everything else?
Yeah, I did actually. And I think what I found was that I had to trust myself. Previously, I'd been working in genres where it was fairly predefined and there was a certain sound that you needed to achieve. And what I found with the blues music is that I can really be myself. And so there was a little bit of unlearning to do, I think, and I had to trust myself to let the story out. Yeah,
that's not easy, trusting yourself though, is it?
No, I might write a song about that. No, it's not. And I think you expose yourself because you're saying, well, then this is me. And of course the judgment is then based on you, and so it suddenly becomes much more personal,
kind of bearing your soul, cathartic.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, it's also very, it's cathartic, but it's good medicine as well, I think.
So you're comfortable with it, though? You're comfortable doing it?
Absolutely. Yes. And I can't believe it's taken me so long to get here. I wish I'd moved into this genre a long time ago, because it is very therapeutic, and it's great to actually have this vehicle to be able to write within and feel comfortable.
But it also would seem, there are many bands who have been around for many years, but it also would seem that your rise in terms of acceptance, people knowing about you, the whole sort of fame bit, if that's the correct word, seems to have been fairly meteoric over the last year.
It has. I have had, I've got a fantastic team around me, a fantastic manager, a fantastic band. The songs are well-crafted, they're good songs, and... It's been fantastic. It's my only experience of this, so I can't measure it against anything else. But just to go from releasing the album and not really knowing what was going to happen to suddenly finding, Facebook and lots of people coming along and saying, this is great. And the radio stations, independent, IBBA gave it the nomination, album mm-hmm. of the month. All these things are just incredible. And of course, when you write an album and you release it, you have no idea what's going to happen next. You can only keep your fingers crossed and hope that people will like it.
Yes.
But to like it as much as people are enjoying it, it's fantastic.
It has gone on extremely well. We'll talk more about the album after your next number. What are you going to do for us next?
Our next number we are going to do is Bourbon Street.
Thank you.
Crowds pushing and shoving in the city. There's a sense of excitement. Watch it come alive in Technicolor neon. An explosion of light. Dixieland blues, Creole rhythm fills the air. Sights and those sounds you just won't find anywhere. Doors open wide, anything your heart desires. Bars and the strip clubs where temptation lights the fire. The fun never stops on Bourbon Street. Beer of $4 flowing like a stream. Hurricane cocktail, Pat O'Brien's feet. Canal Street, Esplanade Avenue. Dixieland blues, Creole rhythm fills the air. Sights and those sounds you just won't find anywhere. Doors open wide in the heart of New
track of the first album, came out about a year ago, Bourbon Street, written obviously about Norwich. Something like that, did you write it based on an experience having gone there, or based on what you'd seen on television, or what you'd read?
Yeah, to the second part of the question. I haven't been there, unfortunately. I would like to go there, of course. But yes, some of the songs are obviously written from really gathering resources. That sounds very technical, doesn't it? And really researching and trying to find what that vibe is like, and capturing it.
And do you feel writing like something like that about America and about sort of the roots of the blues, is that easier than writing about Norwich and things like that?
No, I would say it's harder. I mean, for me, songs, the next song we're going to perform actually is very personal, and I'm writing about personal situations, I find much easier. But I mean, there is, I suppose, there is a there's an exercise in songwriting where sometimes you have to test yourself and challenge yourself, and if you just keep writing about your own personal experiences, then you don't always cross over and move into new ground. So I think writing, you know, songs like Bourbon Street and others on the album, yeah, it was about you know, finding things out.
Yeah. Is writing something you do as part of your kind of daily routine? You get up in the morning, have a cup of tea and think, I'm going to write this morning, or does it just come?
It just comes, thank God. It just comes, yeah. I mean, I'm very lucky in that regard, although sometimes it can be a bit of a nuisance. You know, often I'll get into bed at night or I'll see something or hear something or somebody maybe having a conversation. It could be a single word or a sentence and that's it. Everything has to stop. The pad and the pencil has to come out. And once the process starts, you know, I mean, who am I? I'm just a vehicle. I just have to, you know, write it down and it just happens. It's quite organic. I feel very lucky to be able to say that, actually.
If I got hold of your iPhone and started listening to some of the recordings, I'd find loads of little snippets of things.
Oh, my Mac, I've got a little Zoom that I carry around. I use the voice recorder on my phone. I mean, anything. I've written lyrics on all kinds of mediums, some of which I probably shouldn't have, but I have.
So the first album, when it came to putting it together, did you have a mountain of material to choose from, or did you have the tracks kind of all laid out and worked out?
We had about 20 songs all together, and we actually didn't shelve any of the songs. We used all of them, but we did do a small EP release before Bourbon Street just to warm things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we actually, I think it was very efficient songwriting. What can I say? We did actually use all the songs that we had that we wrote, yeah.
And that's a year ago, and the public are voracious in their appetite for new things. And so every time you do gigs, you'll find, have you got anything new, Malaya?
Absolutely.
And so are you hard at work on the next release?
Of course. And just on the drive down today, we've been listening to a track that we've been working on, and hope with a view to getting out this summer. And we're thinking of an EP release in the summertime. So yes, a new song on there. And of course, the next album is currently under construction. And scribbling away and getting ideas together and gathering stuff.
And you say we there, so writing and arranging is kind of a band thing, is it?
It's certainly, yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Bourbon Street, I worked with another songwriter and it was a kind of a collaboration between the two of us. But what I'd like to do with the next album, now that I have these incredible musicians on board as well, is to get more involvement with the band, and so the songs have become more of us.
Yes.
So I think it's important that we all connect with the song equally, so that when we're performing them, you know, you get that connected feeling with the song.
I can see a steel in your eye. So therefore, I mean, are you a democratic band leader?
Oh, I think so.
Looking at the boys.
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to ask.
They're all looking out the window. So basically, it is a kind of a band thing when you come to do the arrangements and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I would never be telling them how to play their instruments any more than they would tell me how to sing, I guess. So, absolutely, I feel that, you know, I use a sequencer because I don't play the instrument. So,
yes.
It's a sketch pad, it's to get ideas together, but then you need to hand that part over to somebody that knows that instrument
and give it up.
Can absolutely give it up, and then they bring it to life. Mm. Yeah.
Before we go into the next track, did the album come out the way you expected it to be?
That's a good question. I think there were revisions that I, of course, if I had started again now, I would change so much of it. I mean, having said that, I shouldn't be thinking that way because it has been so well received. But yes, I think every musician listens to something, you know, several months later and thinks, yes. Oh, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? But you can overcook it, can't you?
Yeah.
You have to know when
to
stop. And
And is there a track on it which you just wish wasn't on it?
Oh, God.
Is there something which if I played on the show, you'd go, oh, Dave, why did you choose that one?
There is, actually.
Are you going to share it with us?
I don't know. I was going to. I'm not supposed. No, they're all brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Love every single one.
We'll drag it out of you before the end. What are you going to do for us next?
We're going to sing Dawn. As she lays next to you, asleep in your bed. I am with you too, asleep in your head. When I wake this morning, you will be there too, next to her perhaps, but beside me too. As you turned in the night, your skin touched hers. Its warmth and its softness yearned and yearned. But as your hands hold her body, it is mine you caress, and it is me you undress. Don't come and rescue me, save me from the misery. Take this broken heart and mend it. Stronger as the days go by, I let you go. I don't know why. I didn't think you loved me, couldn't see past fear. You took another, say she's not me. As the days get longer, from months to years, only the darkest hours see my tears. It's a spoken story that's been sung before, but it's my first time, darling, my first time alone.
Each of us approach music differently, and when we get an album, we listen to it differently, which is one of the reasons why, amongst the IBBA, the DJs chose different tracks. But for me, that's unbelievably powerful. And do you find that when you're doing that on stage, you get members of the audience nodding their heads and going, how did she know that about me?
Yeah, and it seems to be one of those songs that makes the room go quiet.
Yes.
Which is really nice. Mm. And I think, you know, when you write a song, if you can write a song that does that, then that says, you know, that it's a real privilege,
yes.
I think is the word I'm trying to find, to get everybody else to really feel.
Is it a regular part of your regular set list, that?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite songs.
Mm-hmm. And that was written when?
I actually wrote Dawn a few years ago.
Mm.
And
after some pain?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it was a difficult time. It was an unusual situation, and I couldn't quite find how to figure it out. And Dawn was the product of me figuring it out. Mm. Yeah.
Does your set list vary dramatically depending on the venue and you know,
Absolutely. I mean, we have only got the one album's worth of songs at the moment. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we write new material, we'll incorporate that into the set. Of course, depending on where we are and what we're doing and whether we're acoustic or electric, and what we think the venue needs and what we think the audience would like to hear.
Yes, you did both at Skegness.
We did.
Which is unusual in a sense. So you did the electric set first and the next day you did the acoustic set. Roughly the same numbers as well, wasn't it?
It was the same set list, and we just did it acoustically, and it was a really good way to see how the songs worked both ways. And what was brilliant was that the response we got on the Friday night, the electric set, was great.
Yes.
And the response we had on the Sunday afternoon, same songs but acoustically, was great. So we were thrilled. Yeah.
And presumably many people in the same audience as well have been there to both, is that right?
Yes. And rumour has it that they were chatting outside saying that they'd seen us on the Friday night, mm-hmm. and they'd come back on the Sunday for a bit more.
Right. And did it seem strange doing it acoustically? Is it something which you will do more often?
I like both. I like both. There's an energy that you bring to an electric set that's almost like a workout.
Yes.
You know, it really, you do at the end, you just think, wow, and it takes a long time, or it does for me. It takes me ages to come down from that. Mm. But I think when you do it acoustically, you can really feel the song more, perhaps. Perhaps there's more performance in an electric set. But I mean, I don't know. I've not been doing it long.
I mean, you're right.
To...
Acoustic often does mean kind of sitting down and far more relaxed.
Yeah.
And when we do acoustic sessions here, for the most part, people do sit because it's just kind of what you do for acoustic. You know, it's like sitting on the porch.
Yeah.
And for electric, again, most people tend to stand. So there is a difference in the way the voice is as well.
Absolutely.
So,
yes, Yeah.
And, but I mean, who was it? Was it Skegness who said, "Would you like to do a second set on the Sunday acoustically?" I mean, how did that come about?
From the very first email, I was programmed twice. I was put on twice. So I thought, well, if I keep really quiet, maybe nobody will notice, and I'll get to play twice. And that's what happened,
right?
Which was great. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
So, but then the organisers knew that the second set was going to be acoustic, or was that your decision?
It was, no, the organisers knew. Yeah. we were put on the electric set on the Friday night, and on the Sunday afternoon in Jack's is the acoustic afternoon.
Of course, that's
so,
right, yes. Yeah.
So, they knew we'd come and do both, which was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really good. We had a lot of fun.
Your website's current, so you've obviously got web gnomes doing all the work for you, have you?
I would be that gnome. That's me. Yeah, I was trying to keep on, you know, do the admin.
Yes.
Keep on top of the admin.
And the social media is important, and you keep abreast of that as well.
Yeah.
I noticed that a lot of festivals are now just all of a sudden getting more festivals through the course of the year.
Yes, we are, yeah. The bookings are coming in, and I think the more we play, the more people, you know, more confidence people have to book us, and, you know, keep doing a good job everywhere we go, and that should get us into more festivals for the year. This year is about raising the profile, getting Bourbon Street out, playing it live, you know, gelling the band together, and just... really working hard this year and into next year with a view to, you know, the next album, etc.
So the Malaya Blue World Domination Plan is kind of, it's all worked out on your spreadsheet,
oh,
is it?
Oh, yeah, very carefully. Unlike the songwriting, it's almost strategised. Yeah, we've taken a real kind of business approach to this without losing any creativity. But, yeah, I think, you know, it is a combination of hard work. There are aspects of luck, but also you've got to sit down and think sensibly, you know, what can we do? How can we broaden our profile, broaden our audience? You know, the songs, every album takes hours and hours to write, hours and hours to record. And, of course, the plan is to get it out there. So, so we don't want to leave anything to chance, I think. We just want to be as best we can. Think it through. Yeah.
You're probably aware there's a lot of discussion going around at present about the blues and the state of the blues in the UK and the age of its audience, and that its audience tends to be more on the mature side, old farts, call them what you will, you know, and therefore the challenge is to bring in the younger people and you know, actually people are often the age of the bands like yourself, you know, into the business, because without that it's going to, you know, eventually we'll all be in homes and wheelchairs and the audience will disappear. So I mean, are you thinking again of having to strategize how you how you play and what you do and how you market yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also with the songs, although they're blues songs, one thing that I am trying to do is use a little bit of the commercial experience that I've had and think about the structure of the song. So they are hooky and they do have a little bit of a commercial touch, dare I say it, so that the younger people, because the younger people are really raised on that structure, that format. And I think for blues music to be more recognisable to them, we need to lead them in with something they're comfortable with. So songs such as Guilty and Bitter Moon, you know, they're hooky and they sit on the beat, and hopefully the youngsters can connect with them.
Relate to it as well, yes.
And I think as well, lyrically, we need to try and work lyrically a bit younger. You know, the blues is always kind of heartfelt, but actually the youngsters don't have the experiences and can't always connect with that kind of lyric. So it's about thinking lyrically as well. Yeah, it'd be good to encourage younger people into the genre.
Which I think will come eventually, yes.
Yeah,
website is
www.malayablue.com.
Social media, Malaya Blue, everywhere.
Yes. Just Google me. How nice is it to say that? Yeah, you can just Google Malaya Blue, and I think I kind of fill up the first page now, which is nice. I must stop Googling myself.
Don't forget, the computer also remembers what you search for, so therefore, every time you type in your own name, it goes, oh, she's looking at herself
still
again.
She's still looking at herself.
Wonderful. It's been so good to see you. What are you going to finish with?
We're going to finish with Bitter Moon. He threw my love away. And now I'm broken in two. What can I do? He played a wicked game. Past.
took my